When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM. When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift drink and hanging with the people you just did battle with should never be taken away.
But I mean, what's wrong with like calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the school of hard knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
I'm gonna shut the fuck up for 30 seconds. You might learn something.
Welcome to Mama Foods Live, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran, star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your Nissan claws. Here are the Good Brothers.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Thursday night up in here. Plum Love Foods is live. It's 11. It's 10 p.m. on the East Coast, Jeffy. I almost said 11, but I am watching the time.
It is 10 p.m. here on the East Coast, New York.
That's your radio voice? That's nice, buddy. I like that.
Coming in strong.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. We're so excited to be here. It's Plum Love Foods live. We are stoked. It's going to be a fantastic show tonight, man. It's going to be an episode, Jeffy, of Sitting Under the Learning Tree. I can't wait.
Absolutely. I'm super excited. This guy has knowledge to share and abound. It's just a chef's episode, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time to pull up under the learning tree and learn something from one of the best in the world. I can't wait to have the conversation. Dan, this is going to be a great episode. I can't wait.
Oh, I'm so excited since I found out we were having him on. I've been amped up, fired up. Thinking about the meal I had at his restaurant, it's I'm super excited to just learn. You know I love to learn. I can't wait to learn.
Oh, man. That's what it's going to be all about. And a little bit later on, too, we'll also finish off our week with what did we learn this week in food. I'm sure the boys have something to teach us. I know I've got something fun to talk about. And plus, I've about had it with people in advertising, and I can't wait to talk about that. That's going to be a little bit later on in the program. But we're so excited for our guest tonight that I just... Jeffy, I think I just want to jump right into it. How do you feel about that?
You know me. I'm froggy, son.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, on the program tonight, we are joined by the one and only Chef Bun Lai. He's a pioneer in the sustainable food movement and perhaps one of the best known foragers, not just in Connecticut, but on the planet. Mia Sushi in New Haven was the first sustainable sushi restaurant in the entire world. The restaurant closed at the end of 2020, but if you miss it, don't worry. Mia Sushi has become Mia's in the Woods, an educational and culinary experience in Woodbridge, Connecticut. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome an icon in the food world, a man who is changing people's lives in the food world, and one of the best good brothers you're going to meet on the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program, Chef Bun Lai. There he is. Chef,
all the lies that you just told about me.
Listen, you got to build them up, Chef. You got to make them feel excited to be here, right?
I'm excited to be here, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
Dude, we're so excited to talk to you, and I can't wait to get into a couple of things with you. Like I said, I met you through my show I do on NPR, and a lot of fun. I was just in that conversation. I feel like there was so much more I wanted to get into, but, you know, it's a little bit more of a box there, so I can't talk, you know, deep into food with on the NPR show. You know, not everybody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
Or at least with me. Chef, let's just talk a little bit just to start it. Just, I want to hear like your philosophy kind of when it comes to food, just to kind of set the table for everybody.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a really good question. A question that I should probably ask myself sometime, but kind of off the cuff. Man, what would my philosophy be? You know, I'll tell you, I'm a born artist. So ever since I was really small, I knew that I was an artist, just like some of my friends knew that they were gay when they were little, you know, and, my dad's a scientist and he didn't like it, you know,
right.
Just like a kid coming out, you know, back in the day, parents wouldn't be, psyched about it. Being a chef was something that was accidental to me. It wasn't something that I planned to be or hoped to be. But what was cool about it was it brought me back to being an artist. And my journey as an artist was an existential one in which I was trying to figure out how I could live in a more meaningful way while using my artistry, and I did not have an answer to it. I didn't have an answer to it for years and years and years, even as a young adult and even as a young chef. And after a decade of cooking went by, I realized that I had discovered the meaning of my existence, which was to be an artist through the medium of food, and that food was profoundly powerful because it was a way of looking at different cultures and individual people at the same time too. And there was nothing that I was more interested in than human beings. And then the other thing that I was really interested in throughout my life, because I come from a family of people who love to fish and forage, is nature.
Yeah.
So I was able to, through food, combine two of my passion and then also rediscover my inner artist.
So
I don't know if I answered the question at all.
Well, you did, but you definitely kind of left a bunch of doors there, which is great to ask questions about.
I'm also an extraordinary bullshitter.
You were on the right program then. Listen,
top level. Yeah, top level.
Our motto here on this program is Chef, we have a microphone. So that means we're experts. That's it.
I feel at home.
Yeah, perfect. He's one of us. Hey, well, so you talked about your dad being a scientist, but your family also owned a restaurant, right?
Yeah, so how we ended up over here was that my dad's first job in the United States after he finished up doctorates at University of Cambridge in England was here in New Haven at Yale University, specific in the med school doing research. So So research was his passion. He was an MD, but he also had a couple of PhDs as well. And he didn't do clinical medicine. His purpose in the world at that time was to do research that would make a bigger impact on humanity in a positive way.
Yeah.
So I don't think the apple fell far from the tree, because I was searching for the same thing, but in art, and then I found it through food.
Yeah, that's a really good segue into that, because it definitely didn't. I mean, Mia Sushi in New Haven, I mean, obviously world-renowned. Everyone knows this restaurant. And what you were doing there was pretty unheard of. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Yeah, so my mother opened up Mia's in 1982, but prior to that, we lived in Yale apartments with like a four burner electric stove and a little electric oven, and she started a catering, a tiny little catering business out of there. As a chef now, looking back, I can't even imagine how she was able to, you know, feed 50 people or whatever off of that little stove. That's a show in itself, maybe, right? Like that theory can do. But eventually it became Mia, and Mia in Japanese means shrine. So she wanted to make a space dedicated to food, but it wasn't just about food. It was about soul food, right? And so that is Mia eventually evolved into something that was driven by sustainability. Makes perfect sense, because it was really kind of an offshoot of her dreams and aspirations of what she wanted this restaurant to become, and what my dad was already doing in his work in research.
So Mia's ended up becoming this incredibly sustainable restaurant when you took over. Were you doing the sustainability stuff when your mother was there, or no?
Well, I kind of, you know, it wasn't like particularly well thought out on my part. So I went into it as like in the late 90s doing plant-based sushi, and eventually I had like the biggest plant-based sushi and the first plant-based sushi menu in the world. And then afterwards I did sustainable seafood, and we're the first sustainable seafood restaurant in the world for sushi. And then invasive species followed as well, and insects and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that's really, that's before the internet. So I didn't really know that I was doing it all alone. It was only in retrospect.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That other people told me, hey, you know, you were the first doing it.
Wow. But you had no idea.
But I had no idea. Not only that, like in New Haven, we had a cult following, but at the same time, we were liked as much as we were disliked. And then, much of my career was people looking at my quirky menu and running out the door. Like I had people do that a few times a day for most of my early part of my career, which is really, really good. And then the earliest part of my career, I was just a really terrible cook. And that was a really good, good thing too, because to really care deeply about something and be so bad at it for so long was so very good for my character. I think I'm a pretty patient person because of it. I'm also really forgiving person, and also I understand that, man, you got to suck at something for a while before you get even pretty good at it. So nowadays I think I'm a pretty gutsy person. I'm not really afraid of taking chances. I'm not afraid of failing, because my entire career has been about making mistakes and not being appreciated for even the good stuff that I do sometimes, which is absolutely okay. And absolutely the way it should have been anyway.
You know, we preach on this program the DIY style when it comes to getting things done and doing things your own way, and you know, it's not always going to work, and sometimes those are the best learning moments.
Yeah, and most of your ideas might be really shitty. That's the reality of it. And it might be that one or two ideas that just kind of catches on or opens the door to a right to a great direction. Or failure is often a way of, you know, the universe or God nudging you into a direction that's even better than what you see in front of you.
Absolutely.
So my entire career has been a series of mistakes and failures. And here I am, and it's been a hell of a ride, and most of it really good in retrospect. And when I was young, I didn't feel that it was good at all, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man, to think about that, because it's like you fail up almost, you know, when you fuck things up. It's easier.
Yeah.
You learn.
Yeah,
You mess. Maybe that's why I call it messing up, because you do go up eventually at some point. You're down for a second, but I want to talk about some of this plant sushi really quick before we get into some other things.
Yeah.
What was the first like sushi roll you made, and what did you use in it that was, you know, the plant sushi?
Yeah, so the first sushi roll I made, so back in the day, we used to do a traditional sushi roll called kampyo, which is dried gourd that's been rehydrated in teriyaki sauce, which is essentially like a watery teriyaki sauce, which is essentially soy sauce and sugar and water. And I didn't like it, and even back in those days, I didn't like using sugar. I knew that it was really bad for you.
Right.
So it was popular with this young lady named Nancy Hunt, who used to come a few days a week. And one day I just stopped making it because I just didn't want to do this sugary thing anymore.
Right.
And instead, I made a roll with sweet potato in it. And then she liked it, and she forgave me for not making this kampyo roll. And then from there, I had all these other rolls and recipes that blossomed, and I went pretty nuts with it. And I had pages and pages of different types of recipes that were plant-based but inspired by different cultures.
You know. It's got to be a big leap for you, though, to do that.
Yeah.
As a sushi restaurant, like, that's a ballsy move.
Well, so I focused, by that time I'd focused on being obsessed with traditional Japanese sushi, but I started thinking that traditional sushi had a lot of fundamental problems, including the fact that we were using white rice instead of whole grains. Not only that, we were dumping massive amounts of sugar into the white rice, and then people thought that it was like healthy food. And, which it will. And I also noticed that we were using all sorts of different type of flavor enhancers as well that 99.9% of Japanese restaurants use. And even at that point, I didn't really understand to what the impact was on health, because it's actually quite complicated. I knew that the conventional and what was known as traditional sushi was hardly traditional at all anymore, and that there were a whole lot of improvements that could be made.
Right.
I think I was able to also think that way because, you know, my mother's Japanese, so I'm half Japanese, but I'm also half from Hong Kong on my dad's side, and I grew up over here in Yale apartments. surrounded by kids from all these different countries too. So I had all these different ways. Ways of looking at the world. And, I didn't honor tradition as something that couldn't be shifted at all.
That's crazy. So Chef, this is Jeff. I just wanted to, I kind of wanted to unpack some of the stuff you had said before. You know, you were mentioning, you know, not cooking with sugar and not cooking with white rice. What are the substitutes that you use? Like, what are things that you started to use in place of those things? Like, what are some of the ingredients that you started to implement into the sushi that kind of made it stand out?
Good question.
Yeah. So, for example, I started making a whole bunch of different types of rice combinations that were inspired by whole grain bread recipes. And have the toothiness also of whole grain as well. I also, for example, made a recipe that was inspired by the story of here's just an example of one of many, but this recipe is inspired by the biblical story of the Queen of Sheba, meaning King Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives him a gift of spices, and it's their way of sharing their culture with each other. And so I took a dozen spices that she might have given him, and it went into the roll to season it. And then I imagined that sushi came from Africa instead of Asia, which is entirely possible because we don't know if it happened in West Africa or if it happened along the Mekong River. We still don't know. So it could have easily happened in West Africa. So I created like this African recipe too, but this time using teff, which is the grain that the Queen of Sheba and her people would have eaten. And then I used that instead of rice.
Wow. So you used teff
in lieu of rice.
Wow. That's amazing. I love teff. So it had such a different texture, I bet too, right? It was like,
yeah. And then I put like, sheep's milk cheese as well, because the Israelites were shepherds, you know?
Wow.
And, yeah, and then I put okra in because okra is also an African vegetables. And
you're blowing my mind, bro.
it's so much fun. And I'll tell you, this is the kind of stuff that only happens here in America. This could have never existed in Japan. And the reason why is because in Japan, they're just so about protecting their own tradition, you know?
Mm.
So... Wow. Sustainable sushi couldn't have happened out of Japan, where sushi really evolved to the highest level. It could only happen right here.
Man, and I want to talk more about sustainability in just a second. Dan, we got to digest that for a second. Why don't you get Chef's plugs out there for him while we swallow that?
Dan?
You can catch Chef Bun on IG on Cooking for Peace, Cooking No G for Peace, and miyasushi.com, and or miyasushi@gmail.com.
There you go. You find out more about what's going on. There's lots of great photos of Bun on his Instagram. You got to make sure you check him out. Doing everything from fishing to kung fu to harvesting oysters. So much fun stuff, Chef. Using the teft, and I never even thought about where sushi came from until you said that. And man, I mean, I you totally could be right. Like, we really don't know, do we?
Yeah, well, man, food's been evolving. Human beings have been crisscrossing the planet since we left Africa and evolving the food along the way as well. So it's really not hard to imagine food evolving in one way or another. Different direction than it did. It's like, imagine Ireland, for example, without potatoes, right? And potatoes are from Peru, or Italian cuisine without tomatoes, and tomatoes are from the Americas.
Right.
I
say that all the time, and no one believes me, Chef. Yeah. I'm like, Italians didn't know what tomatoes were until they came here.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like it totally sounds like a lie, but it's not.
Right.
So, and we haven't been here very long anyway. Yeah.
I thought he was lying the whole time. I thought tomatoes came from Italy.
Yeah.
Jeffy, I never lie to you about this stuff. Yeah.
He attacks Italians. He does this.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah. Well, rice in the Americas comes from, was taught taught the colonizers, the settlers, from African slaves from West Africa who knew how to plant and harvest it. The barbecue could have most likely come.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Africa as well. It's a very African way of cooking on all parts of Africa, actually.
See, my problem is, Chef, is that you make it sound so nice and like romanticized like that. When I talk to Jeffy about this, I'm like, it's not ricotta, it's fucking ricotta. There's two T's and an A in that word, ricotta.
That's true. He attacks Italians, I told you.
I'm an English major, right? No, I'm not at all, but that's okay. So, Chef, I want to talk a little bit about...
You were on drama team.
Oh, right. Some of the seafood that I see that you're so passionate about, and one of the things I was explaining to my wife when you were going to be on the show, I was like, I just love how much he embraces the seafood that's here. Like, if it's not really here, then we're not going to eat it. Yeah. You should eat what's close by.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing to do. It's a tricky thing to do to eat well, right? Because first of all, it's hard to figure out in a world where, in a society where there are so many different ways of eating. And it's really hard to eat locally, especially when most of the food is coming from all over the place. And really sometimes out of necessity, right? So I think like the job that we do as chefs is incredibly challenging because that's why these shows that you're doing are so incredibly important because there's so much knowledge and the knowledge keeps on evolving at the same time too. We're learning new things. The science keeps on revealing new information that we have to be on top of. And people trust us more than they do their doctors many times. So it's exciting for us to even know more so that we can give good advice to people.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think people are getting more food smart too, or at least they're asking more questions now than they did in the past.
Yeah, but we're also in a time of misinformation. So that's where it gets really, really tricky. And we're also in a time in which corporations are more powerful than governments.
Right.
So it turns out that a lot of what we buy, we can't trust to be of quality. And the government that we help protects us is also run by corporations, which means that the government itself sometimes is corrupt. So it's really especially important that we're educated and we are critical thinkers and we're educated with the right information because we're critical thinkers. So I'll give you an example, circling back to the seafood that you're asking about. Everyone assumes that seafood's just good for you. The average person will just go out and just pick seafood. All right, I'll get some shrimp, I'll get some salmon. But they're not really scrutinizing the seafood. They're not asking the right questions. And that's where sustainability is incredibly important because if it's bad for the planet, chances are it's bad for you. And that's a good rule of thumb. So most of the seafood that we get comes from abroad.
Yeah.
So that's about 90% of the seafood that you see at the supermarkets from abroad. Less than 1% of that gets inspected by the FDA.
Less than 1%, really?
Yeah, because we haven't put the resources into the FDA to actually inspect the seafood that's coming in. So less than 1%, and most of that seafood fails, almost 90% of that seafood fails inspection due to salmonella, antibiotics, fungicides, human feces, other microbial contaminants, et cetera.
So, and there's a lot of that's being caught illegally too. Like there's a huge illegal seafood market that isn't being checked as well.
Yeah, so you're talking about a good more than a third of the seafood that comes in the United States is over a couple billion dollars worth is illegal. And the problem with the illegal is not just the contamination, but also it exasperates and encourages overfishing, which is one of the biggest problems that the ocean is facing today. And the other is human rights abuses, including modern-day slavery.
Jesus. So what do you think, Chef, are some things that chefs could do? So if I'm running a restaurant and I want to do some sustainable fish or make my fish sustainable here at my restaurant, what can I do to make that happen?
Well, it's much easier than ever before. That's the reality of it. Because nowadays, we have access to all this information. As a rule of thumb, if you don't have access to information, buy domestic, because America has one of the best managed fisheries in the entire world. And if you can't buy American, then go check out, for example, Monterey Bay's Seafood Watch.
Oh yeah, the Seafood Watch
app that you can download. Or Environmental Defense Fund has a Seafood Selector as well. Oceana has their own as well. There's a lot of resources, so you can literally look up the fish and then see if it's as sustainable as you like it. You know, there's different levels of sustainability.
So Chef Bun, I have a question real quick. So when I was at your restaurant, the final dish was this Asian shore crab, and it came on a potato cake with some blue crab in it. And the Asian shore crab was so cool, so delicious, so crispy. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you find something like that? Like, how do you discover something that's kind of insignificant to most people and put it on your menu and make that thing, like, stand out the way it did?
Today is environmental anthropologist. He's a professor, I think, in Australia now. He and I were flipping rocks in Brantford, Connecticut, and saw these little crabs scurrying around. He and I both had grown up in Connecticut, so we knew that those crabs hadn't existed when we were kids. So we looked about that they're invasive species. And in 2001, I was just working on sustainable seafood. And at that point, we had like one of these eureka moments of, wait a second, invasive species, maybe we should be focusing our attention on this as a sustainable food source, because these are destructive to the environment. And if you focus this destructive appetite that human beings have to a destructive species, maybe we can help rebalance that habitat. And that's really kind of how it happened, just by mistake, by stumbling upon some crabs going underneath a rock. Later we go out. Yeah. Later we ended up getting shell fishing ground, in Brantford and a couple of boats. And then, which allowed us to go and harvest, those invasive species right out of our grounds, along with a whole bunch of other ones as well.
I mean, it's just weird to think. We're the most destructive species there is, aren't we, humans?
Yeah, so we are the number one invasive species.
But if we can aim that destructiveness, we might be able to help some of the other species, which is, you said something like that. I just want to get you to say it again, because that was really, I don't know, kind of awesome.
Yeah, so as long as humans have been around, we've been eating species away, you know, from the time when we're throwing spears and taking down, gigantic elephants with massive tusks, all the way down to not too long ago, eating away a whole bunch of different types of birds as well.
Yeah. Buffalo.
A buffalo, of course. Yeah, and then today, interestingly, we are in a time of mass extinction again. So the last time we were in a time of mass extinction, it happened because a meteor hit the Earth. This time, the only difference is it's because of the human appetite. And the appetite isn't only what we put in our mouth, but it's how we consume. Everything that we're purchasing, and the impact that what we're purchasing is having on the rest of the planet.
Bro.
Well, Chef,
I was just thinking about.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeffy. Sorry, you can go first.
Oh no, I was just gonna. Jeff, again, I'm just chiming in. I was actually just thinking about all this the other day. You know, I'm in New York City 4 days a week right now for work. And, I'm just walking around the city and I'm looking at all the fucking packaging and shit and the trash cans. And I'm just like, where does all this fucking go? Like, how do we deal with this? Like, I was like the infrastructure to keep a city like this not disease ridden is just mind boggling to me. You know what I mean? It's just,
So,
what you're saying makes perfect sense, because in a lot of ways, the infrastructure is working, because cities are one of the most sustainable ways that human beings can live, because you have all these different people together in a tight space. So as far as like energy usage, it's much more efficient. But that said, like when you're talking about that garbage, it wasn't long ago when China stopped taking our trash.
Yeah,
and then
I know.
And we realized, wait a second, we are completely screwed, because we barely recycle anything ourselves, and we've been sending off our trash to poor countries, and that is not a sustainable system.
No.
And the fact of the matter is, the way that we're consuming today is, if we keep it up, there are a lot of scientists that believe that we're not going to be around for much longer. And it makes sense. Everything that we've done very, very little to counter climate change. And that's going to lead to all sorts of disasters.
Right.
All around the world. Because for a whole host of reasons, we're going to have wars break out because of drought and famine in places like sub-Saharan Africa. Coastal places where people live will be hit by massive storms, which will make them unlivable. Food costs will go through the roof, because in places that we grow food, like in California, for example, which is the breadbasket of the planet, they will no longer be able to predict the weather, and it's already a problem right now. So right now we're at a point where we're going to have to make radical changes to the way that we live, and make revolutionary changes to how society exists and how government operates. If we don't do that, future generations will have to pay for it in a catastrophic kind of way. I think catastrophic and biblical proportion.
Wow.
And I'm not a religious person. Yeah. But
well,
and that's why
I am. Jeffy's very religious, Chef.
But that's why my work is so motivating to me, you know.
Mother Nature's undefeated,
man. Yeah, Mother Nature is undefeated. She doesn't need us at all.
Kind of what you're saying, and who knows? I mean, you could look at some of these crazy viruses and things going on now. Maybe that's Mother Nature's way of saying, hey, y'all need to cut that shit out.
That came from the food system. The COVID came from the wet market, you know, somewhere in China or Asia.
Right.
And it's the way we're mistreating and not respecting animals and making them suffer. The next ones may come out of, you know, as we're pointing at China, it may come out of one of our factory farms that were raising chickens and pigs or cows.
Pigs.
Yeah. You know, oh my God. In an inhumane way.
The pork industry is fucking horrible.
Well, Jeffy, out of all the guests, Jeffy, the guests we've had on the show talking about, you know, coronavirus, we don't really get deep into it or whatnot because it's just, you know, everyone has their opinions, but what Chef said right there is one of the smartest things anyone said on this program about that right there. Just, you know, talking about where it came from and that stuff. Chef, not to switch gears too hard on this, but you brought up something else, just talking about, you know, how we raise chickens, how we raise pigs. And, you know, it's something I've always been kind of against, but we're getting to a point now where we can GMO a chicken breast. We can make ground beef in a lab where it's not really a cow, but we can do that. I mean, it sounds kind of like, and if I'm, tell me I'm wrong, it's okay. Is that something you'd be for as opposed to doing it the way we traditionally do it?
So I'm not against like people hunting animals. Because these animals, for example, have lived healthy lives. The problem is that we're eating sick animals that are pumped up with antibiotics and hormones. And we end up having it in our own bodies. And not only that, we're incubating all sorts of other diseases there that are going to come back as another pandemic, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So, the other issue is that, man, we're totally against slavery because it's abusive to human beings. But we've got blinders on when it comes down to the abuse of other sentient animals. Birds are extraordinarily bright. Chickens are extraordinarily bright at the same time, too. Human beings learn music from birds. The birds made much more complicated architecture than human beings ever did in the beginning. If you look at a bird's nest, that's incredible architecture. Human beings were hiding out in caves when birds were doing that, right? So they're very... So these creatures are incredibly sentient. They've got caring relationships with one another. At the same time, we try to ignore that. And I think if we want to live in a way that's much more humane, we have to be cognizant of the suffering around us, and we have to make it go away the best way we can. So factory farming has to become something of the past. And I like what you're saying about, like, patriotist meat. While, of course, it sounds gross, you know what? If you're not abusing an animal in order to do it, well, I think it makes perfect sense to me.
Especially if there's less waste, and I don't know. It's funny because I'm kind of on that same track. I'm like, listen, if we can make this, you know, and it's less waste. We're not killing things. We're being humane. I don't know. Is it that bad? I don't think it is.
I don't think so either.
Hold on.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeffy.
What are we talking about here? what the fuck are we making it out of?
Well, DNA, you know what I mean? Like, of proteins and shit.
Oh, are we? Is that what it is? Give me another buzzword that you don't understand. Well, tell me something else that you don't know what the hell you're talking about that's being built in a lab.
But we actually have the science to do that already. It's the same science used to make if you get third-degree burns and all of your body, they're going to create skin grafts from your own body. So it's the same technology. In the future, we're going to be able to do it so that we can pump it out so that it doesn't take as long and doesn't use as much resources.
I mean, listen, Jeffy, it's we save stem cells when my daughters were born to, you know,
eat them.
No, but they can regrow limbs from them. It's crazy.
Maybe
it's pretty incredible.
It's crazy stuff. All right, we're getting real.
They can regrow limbs right now from a stem cell.
Yeah.
Well, all that aside, what I noticed from the pandemic is that because of the inability to get food more readily, the things that people are used to getting things from, you know, meat from Chicago or produce from Mexico, people have been forced to actually go more locally and have to rely on the local markets and local farms. And that's a great thing because and also the prices have gone so high on the things that were so used to being cheap because of it, the inability of it, the unavailability of it, that now they kind of match up with the local. So local meat is catching up to where it should be and actually more obtainable than ever before.
Yeah, I think that's true.
That is true. But the reality is that we're not supposed to be... So there's all sorts of different diets around, including like keto, right? Which is like a super fat-based diet.
Yeah.
Then there's like the super protein-rich diet. The protein ones are problematic, and the reason is because there is a cause and effect of eating too much protein and then leading to all sorts of different diet-related diseases. And it's not the same with fat. Like, for example, protein, if you eat too much protein, it turns to fat in your body. If you eat too much carbohydrates, it turns to fat in your body. Then you end up with some sort of diet multiple diet-related diseases. If you eat too much fat, it doesn't turn to it's not stored as fat. It's hard to eat fat and turn to fat. So if you look at the way people are eating today, there's like a huge obsession with protein. Americans are afraid that they're not getting enough protein. So a lot of people are eating like protein bars, having protein shakes. A lot of people are into fitness, so they think that they have to eat lots of protein in order to get muscular, and they couldn't be farther from the truth. The reality is that most Americans eat so much protein that they end up urinating most of it and then stressing out their body because their body has to deal with all that protein as well, and then increasing their possibilities of getting diet-related diseases.
Yeah, man.
We don't need to be eating much beef or fish or any of that sort of stuff. We can get all the protein that we need from just plants by combining grains and legumes, and which are probably a lot cleaner, definitely a lot cleaner than eating factory farmed animals.
But I really like steak, Chef. That's my problem.
So it's not a problem at all. So if you eat like a steak from a cow that's been treated well, that's been eating grass, why not? And guess what? It'd be $20 a pound, but you'll savor it more.
I'm fine with that. And I'd rather slaughter it even myself. Yeah. I'm totally down with that.
Me too. And I'd rather have a steak once a month and it be the best steak versus going out and getting, you know, a fast food burger, you know, every single day.
Chef, what are your feelings on Wagyu?
Ragu?
Yeah, like Wagyu or Kobe beef.
Oh, I thought you said like Ragu as in like the that tomato sauce.
Yeah. What are your feelings of Ragu versus Prego?
No.
I just like you to weigh in really quick.
You just threw me like, I was like, man, you just threw me like a question, like a real curveball over here, Ragu. What am I supposed to say to that?
You're like, what do I think of Ragu? Oh, my God.
haven't had Ragu in a while.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This next segment brought to you by Ragu.
I like Ragu, like I like Chef Boyardee. Brings back childhood memory. I probably like Ragu from a point of having good memories about it more than Wagyu.
Wow.
So you're telling me you'd rather have the jarred sauce over the beef from Japan?
No. I think I have more fond memories. Like a can of like Chef Boyardee. I have fond memories of that for sure. Like if I go to a gas station, I'll pause and look at it longingly before I leave. You know.
Yeah. No, but I was just wondering because you know we've had a great guy on the show, Justin, talk about Wagyu. He's a importer of Wagyu from Japan. Before the COVID, we were supposed to go to Japan and check out a bunch of the prefectures and meet some of the farmers, and he always touts the way that they farm being so much different and so much better, and they're just so much in tune, more in tune with the environment. But of course, it's $75 a pound, you know, for like B cuts compared to whatever. I just was wondering, like, is that something? I mean, what do you think of that? Like, have you ever used it yourself? Is it something that you think it's like outrageous, or
I don't think it's outrageous at all. I think that's how high quality food has to be expensive.
Right,
because there's just so much more input into it. You know, they don't have as many heads of cattle, and they're taking really, really good care of these animals as well. They're respecting the creature. You know,
oh my god, it's so amazing. They have nose prints. When I get the Wagyu, when Justin sends it to me, I get a nose print and a serial number for the cow, and where it came from, and a picture of the farmer. It's such a different process. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, and that's the closest thing to that, and really definitely on this the same level is any local food that you get from a local farmer, right?
Yeah.
Where you actually have a relationship, like in a world today of food where we don't know where it's coming from, and there certainly is not a farmer anymore because it's, you know, it's an industrial farm that it's coming from. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I think as far as meat's concerned, I wouldn't bat an eye in paying $75 a pound for something like that. You know?
Well, let me know because I have a great connection.
No. Yeah, well, let me come up with $75 first.
Next dinner, we got to cook together.
Oh my God,
Ragu for sure.
Yeah. Well, give me $8 worth, all right?
I got you.
All Wagyu aside, you can check Chef Bun on his IG at Cooking for Peace on IG, miyasushi.com, and miyasushi@gmail.com. And I don't see any pictures of Wagyu, but so I see some beautiful pictures of farm fresh vegetables. I see some crickets. I see some all kinds of delicious food on there. You can't miss it.
Well, Chef, that's a great segue, just talking about all these proteins. And we'll get you out of here. I know it's getting late, man.
No, I'm having a blast. Thanks, guys.
Oh, dude, you're awesome. Good. There's so many different forms of protein we can eat, and I want to touch on some different types of protein that are out there that are probably more widely accepted in the world as opposed to here. But you're big on trying to eat, you know, like invasive plants as well, which I think is a whole nother genre of food that people haven't really gotten into. You know, I know here on my own property with my wife and her gardening and what she's done, we have porcelain berry all over. And I think it's edible, isn't it?
It's edible. It's not very tasty.
Yeah. People make jam or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure we can figure it out. We should definitely try it.
But eating invasive plants is kind of something else that you're very passionate about, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And
yeah,
are there different? Yeah, please go ahead. Sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to even where to start with that, 'cause that's such a crazy question.
Right here in New Haven. I live right outside New Haven County.
Right.
Right in my backyard, where we have a garden as well. There's around 30 different types of edible invasive species and weeds. So these are plants that no one wants to eat. So they're more edible plants. They're wild, just growing naturally, than the number of plants that I grow in the garden to eat. And not only that, these wild plants are exponentially more nutritious than anything that we can possibly grow, because over 10,000 years of cultivating plants, we're able to make them much, much sweeter, which is actually a problematic, because the fruits that we eat today are so full of sugar and fructose is metabolized in a way that makes us fat. They become bigger, juicier, prettier, but they're not more nutritious. So all the wild plants are much more nutritious. And meanwhile, the ones that we're used to eating that we grow or even buy at the supermarket or the farmer's market aren't nearly as nutritious as the ones that we don't want. Yeah, there's 8,000 known phytochemicals in the plants that we eat. Every single one of these plants has, an average of a couple hundred, and we don't even know what all these things do. But they're very, very important to us. And that's why, just kind of off on a tangent, all these diets that are really limiting, like that don't allow you to have certain carbohydrates or whole groups of foods, are problematic, because if you cut out a lot of these plants out of your diet, man, you're losing out on a lot of nutrients, more nutrients than we even understand that our body does need.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're omnivores. We should eat everything. I mean, we're able to eat and digest almost every single thing. It's really amazing.
And our bodies are very, very resilient. So it's able to, during the summertime, the spring and summer and fall, for example, if we're living over here, we can eat a lot of plants. And then come wintertime, we can switch over and then eat mostly animals. And then we can switch over again and eat plants again. So our bodies are able to do that. And that's why, for example, like that diet that I was talking about, ketosis, actually, the ketonic diet works. Because, back in the day, we might actually, in the fall, eat a whole lot of berries and then end up getting all this stored fat. And then once wintertime comes, we start eating away our fat, stored fat as well as energy. And then start eating fish or whatever else that we can actually end up, animals that we can catch. And then springtime comes and we don't have berries, but we have all sorts of different types of vegetables, and we can eat that as well. So when we talk about what the best diet is for human beings, there isn't one best diet. And when people are like, hey, this is the paleo diet's the best, and the Paleolithic people ate like this, well, it's actually not true. People ate differently depending on the season, depending on the climate they lived in, depending on the habitat, which also depends on the climate too. So your ancestors might have eaten really differently than my ancestors. And that's why when it comes down to eating well, you really have to listen to your body. And because certain bodies do better with carbohydrates, other bodies will eat a little bit of bread or pasta and suddenly you're fat, so therefore you shouldn't be eating that way. But all of us, no matter what kind of sensitivities to food we have. We need to be eating whole foods. And that's why these plants are so incredibly important, because when you're talking about all these wild weeds, you're talking about not only whole foods, but you're talking about the apex of the most nutritious type of whole foods that there are.
God, you're so awesome, Chef. You make me want to be a better chef. Do you know that? Every time I talk to you, you make me want to be better.
Oh, man, you are flattering me, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I was just kidding about everything I said.
He's like, I'm sitting here eating a fucking handful of McDonald's fries right now, you asshole.
This is all pro wrestling.
I'm actually eating a fish filet sandwich with extra tartar sauce.
Oh man.
Put cheese on that?
You've got to have that cheddar cheese, man, on
there. It's not cheddar cheese.
That ain't cheddar
cheese. It's cheese food, but yes. Yeah,
well, you want cheese, okay, cheese product.
Yeah. You gotta have that cheddar-like cheese.
That's right.
Cheese
that's right.
Product. Yeah, cheese food product.
Chef, we do appreciate your time so much, man. It's been such an amazing conversation.
Oh, man.
Absolutely. Under the learning tree right now.
I want to give you my money just to kick you. And like, I was just looking at your website. I want to do like the full. I want to do the whole shebang. I want to go in.
Let's all do that. You know, maybe this spring.
Get the kids 100%.
Together, get the wives together, and we'll all hang out and cook together.
I'm that so down, amazing. Chef. I'm going to bring you a bag of crawfish from my creek in the backyard, too. We're going to eat those. It's going to be great.
Oh, my God. You have crawfish? Oh, God. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're going to do that for sure. Hey, before we get you out of here, man, we got to touch on, of course, we talked about some different types of protein. It's never been a scary thing to me to think about insects as a protein. People all over the world eat insects as a protein. But for some reason here in this country, it's very polarizing to even bring that up or talk about it, Chef. Why is that?
That is interesting, right? Because most of the world eats insects. Yeah. The only people who don't eat insects are Europeans and America. So,
fucking white people.
Fucking white people. That's right. That is true.
He's right.
It's so interesting how we tend to stick to what we like as children and don't really swerve from it. But that said, it's so interesting and promising how our palates do change generationally and by a lot. The only problem is that it's changed generationally and by a lot, but in the wrong direction. So we're going to have to swing it to a better direction. And that's where insects come in. When you're talking about the farming of insects, you're talking about getting the same kind of nutrients that you do, primarily the protein that you want from meat, and you're able to do it in a much more efficient way doing insects. And for meat, like for beef, you might use 2,000 gallons of water per pound of beef in a world where water is a diminishing resource, whereas in for the same amount of cricket, you might be using a fraction of a gallon. I can't exactly remember what the numbers are. So it makes more sense for us to move away from these massive livestock, which is sentient beings, to insects that don't have the kind of sophisticated nervous system in order to feel pain in the way that
we worry about. It is the future. Absolutely.
I mean, think about like a praying mantis. When they mate, for example, the male is screwing the female and having his head eaten off at the same time too, and he keeps on pumping.
If your
wife bit you in the ear, you'd probably stop, you know? So this is our nervous systems are definitely not the same.
No, definitely not. But, you know, the great thing about insects is that they can be manipulated in a lot of different ways, too. Like, there's, like, cricket powders that I've actually used myself in pasta. You know, I've used cricket powder mixed in with flour and made, like, cavatelli. Yeah. And it's delicious. Yeah. I told everyone afterwards that it was crickets. And everyone was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's actually, like, that cavatelli had enough protein. It's like a full meal. You know what I mean? Like, it
was, without a doubt.
And I think that's where it's going to be at.
I've made Papa Doms. Yeah. I made Papa Doms with cricket flour. It works great.
Absolutely. Boom.
Yeah. So I think anywhere where you use insects to replace animal protein, man, it's a huge step up. You know, as far as like adding it to stuff for protein, man, it's starting to happen. It's been happening for the last decade, really, like in protein bars, and in the powders that you're talking about. It'll be interesting to see how much our society will end up embracing it. I know that there's a lot of interest in it because this last time that the cicadas came out, like this summer, there's a whole lot of media attention and just real worldwide attention on that.
Yeah, we eat
one
them?
Cicada. Yeah, I ended up going to D.C. a whole bunch of times in order to catch cicadas and do a bunch of cicada dinners.
How are they? What do they taste like?
Let's see. They taste different depending on the age. So when they come right out of the ground after 17 years, they're the most they're the tastiest. They've got the most substance. Once they're out and they've been out for a few weeks and they've been buzzing, they barely eat at all, then their bodies are kind of hollow. So they're not really that tasty. You know, they're actually the shell themselves. So they're best earlier on, and they are eaten all around the world. And unlike tiny little insects that you eat, these are substantial insects. I've got some in the freezer. I'll save you guys some.
You're blowing my mind.
Yeah, you'll love it. You guys will love it, man.
I've never tried a cicada. I've eaten crickets. I've never bumped into a big bug like that.
But you've eaten it because you've eaten arthropods before. Those cicadas are related to the crayfish in your stream.
Oh, really? Those are for sure.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
so a cicada and like a lobster are in the same family, is what you're saying?
Yeah, they're both arthropods.
Oh, that's
dope.
How about that, Jeffy? There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, people used to be grossed out by lobsters as well. There's a lot of people who don't eat shellfish for a number of reasons, you know.
Yeah. The water bugs.
Chef, I still have a problem with I still have a problem, Chef, with eating like a smoked tarantula leg. I just don't know if I can do it.
Yeah,
cicadas, again, crickets, I'm in, but smoked tarantula? Oh shit!
Yeah, that's all mental though. That's the thing about it, man. There's a lot of stuff that I like. If you give me like a giant centipede, I don't know if I can put that baby in my mouth.
Right?
You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'll do it, but.
When I was in Costa Rica, there was these grasshoppers that flew around like sparrows, and they used to call them Lagusta Terra, which I think is like land lobster, which made me laugh, or like earth lobster, because they looked like, I mean, they were huge.
Yeah.
They were huge. They were like the size of a can of spray paint.
Well, Jeffy, you do a lot of vitamins, too.
Yeah. Those I have no problem eating, because I've already done grasshoppers, and I caught one of those things alive in the Everglades where they also exist, and they are massive.
You caught one? Would you spear it wearing like a loincloth or something?
Yeah, seriously. No, I think it was on its way out. I think it was just on its way out. It was climbing up a fence and it wasn't doing too well. But it was so big. But I saw so many of them like dead inside of those fan boats that we go on.
Yeah.
Damn.
That I have no problem eating. They to me seem very, very delicious, and that's where it's all mental. You know, grubs I'm not really crazy about, but it's mental. You know?
Yeah,
we know this.
It's totally mental, 100%. Dan, get those plugs out there for Chef Bun one more time before we get him out of here. I cannot wait to go spear hunting with Chef Bun in a loincloth. I can't wait.
Well, what are the things that
brought me to your restaurant was my wife is Mexican. We get a bag of crickets from Mexico. They taste like barbecue potato chips. They're delicious. My kids eat them. I don't know what the name of it is, but we just eat. They're delicious.
Yeah, they're called chapulines.
And we wanted to go to your restaurant because I told my kids, I was like, hey, he puts these invasive species and he puts some bugs on a menu. And my youngest daughter was super excited.
He put some bugs on a menu. Damn it, Dad.
I had to gum it down for the kids. They got to understand what it is. And as kids, like he was talking about, understand that you got to teach the children that you can't be afraid of it. It's something that's it's around the world. People eat it and they have to teach them young that this is important, that you got to eat it. Or you don't have to eat it, but it's something you should enjoy and understand that there's protein in it. There's value in eating the bugs, and there's nothing to be afraid of, regardless of what your notion is of it. And it's teaching them young to understand and not to just love it, respect it. And being in a restaurant and getting it, it was, I think it was, I can't remember what was on it. If it was mealworms or crickets that was on the sushi.
It was a black soldier fly larvae.
Yeah, it was delicious, and my kids ate it. My wife was actually the most hesitant, and she everyone loved it, and it was delicious. And that was miyasushi.com. You can catch them there. Cooking for Peace on IG. Check them out. Everything's amazing.
Chef, last one for me before we get you out of here, man. I can't thank you so much for your time, for hanging out with us. It's been such a great conversation. I wasn't trying to keep you for an hour, but it's just been such a great conversation.
No, I couldn't help it. Yeah.
listen, this is a legit, it's a two-parter question. It's a very important question. We're taking the official poll for the entire world here on this program right now. Number one, is a hot dog a sandwich? And number two, based on what we think of what soup is, the definition of a soup, would breakfast cereal be considered breakfast soup?
They're just doing this to piss me off. Bun, this isn't a real question.
I'm
you don't even
have...
Thank you so much for not giving that any time.
Come on, ladies and gentlemen.
You got me stumped.
He's a fucking icon. One of the coolest humans on the planet. He's amazing. Legend. Got an hour with Chef Bun Lai. Chef, we can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you so much for joining us here on Plum Love Foods. You're amazing.
Absolutely.
I look forward to cooking with you in the future, brother. And seriously, please don't ever stop what you're doing, bro.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. All right, Plum, Jeff, Dan. See you guys soon.
There he is. Absolutely. Chef Bun Lai, everybody. Give it up for him. There he goes.
Yeah. Woo!
All right. Wow. What a conversation with that good brother. Are you kidding me? Did we just spend an hour with him? That wasn't the plan. Jesus. Wow. I'm floored. I'm floored, Jeffy.
Man, I'm sending him a message right now. That was a great interview. For so many reasons for me. One, he's such a real dude, you know, and he talks from such a good heart place.
Yeah.
And I connected with all the things that he was saying, and I feel like that we're so like-minded in a lot of ways. And
he's really...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
He's smart.
He's doing it. He's really doing it. Like, there's a lot of things that I say and I think and I worry about, but then I just continue to do what I'm doing. And
well, I wasn't kidding. He makes me want to be a better chef every time I talk to him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really doing some of that stuff. And, you know, he's a slick cat, too, because I'd ask him some pretty straightforward questions, and he's not giving away any of his secrets. He's just like, he would, like, dance around certain things. He'd be like, well, you know, I use a lot of grains that are inspired by this and this.
And it was awesome. It was awesome. Dan, what'd you think, man?
I'm not letting you know shit. We got to hang out.
I loved it. It was a great interview. So much knowledge, so much stuff. I was in it. I was deep in thought. You should have threw out the plugs. I got lost. I'm just listening. I was getting so much information. It was awesome. I love it. There's nothing more that I love than learning and just having that understanding and having experience the food. And he was talking about the sweet potato sushi. That joint was amazing. I didn't even talk about that. His vegetarian sushi. Like, you talk about vegetarian sushi, and you're like, oh, hell nah. Yo, top of the line. Incredible. Dude's got it all.
Yeah, what a great, fun conversation with him, man. I really, really, truly enjoyed it. And, you know, he's a guy who makes me want to be a better chef, and just so much knowledge there. Such an intelligent chef. But more importantly, and I think there's a difference here, you gentlemen, and good brothers, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here. Super intelligent chef, of course, but very thoughtful. I think there's a difference between being thoughtful and super intelligent. He's incredibly thoughtful, but he's both intelligent as well.
Absolutely. 100%.
Absolutely. Super intelligent, super thoughtful, and an all-around wonderful guy. I just feel like he connects. Like, he's just a real person who really, like, the things that he was saying, like, he's so funny. Like, oh, that was all bullshit. Oh, I was just joking. I was lying about it. But because it's so real. You know what I mean? It's so real that I think he's like, I don't know if everybody's even ready for all that.
I mean, how happy did it make you when I asked him the last question? He said, I'm going to hang up now.
So happy. That's exactly, because you know what, Bun, if you're listening, I love you, bro. There, me and you.
There you go.
I see you.
We're gonna take a quick 45-second break, friends, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about what we learned this week and get up out of here on Plum Love Foods Live. You're hanging out with Chef Jeff, Chef Dan. I'm Chef Plum. Just had Chef Bun lie on for an entire hour. How cool was that? Stay right there. Be right back with Plum Love Foods Live.
Oh yeah, Dave, Ergo Chef Knives, the knives used by so many culinary professionals, including all of us here on the program.
From the entry-level Prodigy series to the super sharp Shinzui made from Japanese V10 steel, Ergo Chef has something for everyone.
Hey, listen, every single day I use my Pro Series Santuco and I love it, man. You've seen my knife bag, haven't you? I mean, I've got like three of them in there. It's a great quality knife made by great quality people. And if my word's not enough, just ask guys like Myron Mixon, Guy Fieri, Michael Simon, and tons more.
Tell them you heard about them on Plum Love Foods by using promo code PLUM for a great discount on everything in your order. Knives so sharp, even the great city of Detroit approves.
Get some new gear at ErgoChef.com. Promo code PLUM, that's ErgoChef.com.
Oh, what an amazing hour with Chef Bun Lai here on Plum Love Foods Live. It's your boy Chef Plum, Chef Jeff, Chef Dan. Incredible. We're going to finish this show up as soon as our good friend Dama Beats dropped this beat on us. That's right. Man.
Yo, that commercial made me miss Dave.
We got to call Dave here soon. Get him in the mix. I don't know. I think he's been moving. He's changing jobs. He's moving to Boston.
I know. I just miss him. I miss his face. I miss hearing his voice. It's silly. Fuck yeah.
Man.
Dave!
This episode, for me, gentlemen, is going to be a listen to twice episode because there's so much info there.
Oh. Dude. Just great episode.
Hey, and next best of you, dude, Jeffy, if this is not in there, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah, it'll definitely be in there.
Yeah, I'm no sure. Doubt about it. Well, boys, it's 11:13 here on the East Coast. We just had an hour with Chef Bun Lai. It's about time for us to get out of here. I had one thing I wanted to cover with you guys and do some best of. Not best of. What the fuck am I talking about, Jeff? Doing some what do we learn? If you saw my Instagram post recently this week, there was a post that I reposted on my story from a company called Mizen Kitchen, and they're talking about trying to sell you a knife, and they literally say in the post, this knife will make you a better chef. Did you guys see when I posted that? Did you see that?
Yeah. Fuck yes. Those people.
Yeah, it says, a better knife gives you better skills and a lot of confidence. I don't deny the confidence part. The knife doesn't give skills. Listen, this on my story got a shit ton of views, a bunch of people reposting it. why do people say this shit? It's the marketing of it. Like, just stop it already. Enough. I mean, Jeffy, when you see people post things like this, that makes you want to buy their knife, right?
No. Not at all.
There was sarcasm in my voice there.
I know. It makes me hate them just like you hate them. I just think it's like, it's misleading, and it's marketing, dude. I don't know. I can't hate on the game or hate the player. I hate the game. You know what I mean?
Well, this is what I will promise you, good brothers, here right now. And this show stinks. There's no question in my mind. This show stinks. But I promise you, good brothers, and all the people who do listen to this program, I will keep it 100 and be legit with you all the time, no matter what happens with me moving forward with my career. Much like I did with this, if I see shit like this, I'm going to call it out by name. And I'm not one of those fucking people who's going to say, oh, this fucking ad, these people, blah, 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 and never tag them, never call them out by name. I promise you, I swear to you, if I have a problem, I will 100% man up. And I know it's not PC to say that now, Dan. You're going to yell at me. But I will always call them out by name in public. If I have a problem, if I'm going to say something's wrong with it, I have a problem, I will call them out by name and tag them and give them a chance to respond to me. Because I think what bothers me more than ads like this is people who have a problem with it in our industry and don't say something. Because if we don't say something, it's never going to stop. And it's our duty to get rid of it. To make these people say, hey, you can't do that. Listen, you want to fuck up other industries, do what you got to do. You're not going to come to this one and fuck it up with stuff like that. And Jeffy, I know, I got on my Apple crate here and started chanting and saying these things. And you may get mad at me in the future from projects that we have, Jeffy, when I do this. You might say to me, Plum, you need to settle down. I can't, man. I'm going to always say that shit.
Nah, you know me, bro. I throw gasoline on a fire. I love that shit. Let's get it going. Kick the hornet nest and let's watch people scream.
Well, this story got a shit. I mean, 2,000, 2,500 people. I don't remember what it was now. A shit ton of people saw it. I think more people saw it than saw their ad. So, I don't know. Dan, you're awful quiet. What do you have yourself? A nice set of knees and eyes?
I had some feedback from somebody that said that they actually were kind of in disagreement, felt like once they got a knife that they felt better about, they actually felt more comfortable in the kitchen itself. And that was somebody that was young to the game and just learning, and he was tired of using shitty knives.
Okay, time out. I said that the knife would give you a good knife will give you confidence. I did say that. I agreed with that part. It doesn't change your skill level, though.
No, it won't. But if you got confidence, you can feel better about going forward with trying to get better and better. It will. Only you can improve your skill level. You have to have the fortitude to push through and improve your skill level. Building that confidence will improve that skill level through time. I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying. I agree.
Buying a great knife does not make you better at chopping a brunoise.
No. No, you have to take the time to actually learn how to do it.
That's all I'm saying. 100%. And I said, first thing I said, Jeffy, I don't know if you were paying attention, but I said, I agree with the confidence part on the post. The post says, I'm going to read it to you again here. I'll read it to you again. A better knife gives you better skills and a lot of confidence. I don't disagree with the confidence part. The better knife does not give you better skills.
Absolutely.
That is incorrect. So that's my 2 cents. That's my 2 cents. And it sounds like everybody agrees with me except for the person on Dan's Instagram. Fuck that guy. No. Yeah,
most people get it. I mean, like I was saying before, it's marketing. It's like Michael Jordan with the shoes, you know. Oh, it's got to be the shoes that makes him jump and makes him so great.
Oh, nah, man. That was a good fucking marketing program, though. I bought some Jordans because of that shit.
That's what these dudes are trying to do. They're trying to be like, oh, if you get a knife and it's this knife, you're magic in the kitchen. You're going to slice and dice and be special. Oh, nah, fuck you, man. You ain't shit until you work hard. Just get it right. You know what I mean?
Tell you something right now. My dude, Chef Bun Lai, cuts up shit with a fucking stick. You don't even know. Fuck your knife. He's out there sharpening a piece of bark, cutting fucking Wagyu. He didn't give a fuck.
$35 a pound.
That's what I'm talking about. Hey, let's jump into what did you learn. I don't have the drop yet, so I'll sing it for you. What did you learn this week in culinary? That's my new one. That's the R&B version.
Hee hee.
Dan, you got something for us? You've always got some good nuggets.
Of course I do. So I'm sure your kids eat Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Remy loves that shit.
Okay, you guys know the little story behind it? The janitor who discovered it?
Well, be careful, because we got a good friend over there who makes this shit.
I know. This was kind of the conversation I was having, because I was talking to her and I was telling the kids about it, and we were talking about Flamin' Hot Cheetos, and I was like, where the fuck did the Cheeto come from, right? So I was like, how did they come up with a Cheeto, right? Come to find out, back in 1930, they were in Billet, Wisconsin, and they were making feed for cows. Come to find out, cheese puffs are a byproduct of livestock feed.
What?
Yeah.
We need to call Knock, Chef Knock. Yes. Like, you making livestock feed?
Yo, it was considered industrial waste. And it was left inside the machine that they were using to make feed, because they would break up the corn into small flakes to allow the cows to be able to digest the corn. So within the process, after hours and hours of it going on, it would clog inside, and they would take wet maize and put it inside and push through the stuff that was clogging it. When it came out, it came out in this like long puffy ribbon of corn. Through the heat and everything else, would kind of cook it. One day, this fucking guy, Edward Wilson, is like, I'm gonna take some of this shit home and fuck with it. He takes it home, chops it up, fries it.
Did they have like his actual quote when he found it? I'm gonna take some of this shit home and fuck with it.
Yo, word for word, exactly what he said. Back in 1930, he was like, yo, I'm gonna take this shit home and fucking fry it. So he goes home, he fries it, he puts some of that Wisconsin cheddar, some salt on it. Amazing. Brings it back to these guys. He's like, yo, this shit is really good. They went from making these machines for livestock feed, completely reformatted the machine, started making corn curls, they called them. And they basically created the corn puff.
And fucking corn nuts. And
now it's Cheetos.
Damn.
So Jeffy. It was industrial waste.
I don't know how I feel about that, shit. Jeffy. How do you feel about that?
I think it's amazing. I love eating waste. That's me.
Yo, maybe our friend Chef Bun would be a fan of that. There's no waste there. That's good.
None. Absolutely.
Shit. Jeffy, what did you learn in the world of culinary arts this week?
Well, I learned a lot of things.
Thanks for sharing.
The thing that I learned the most that fucked with me was... there was four foods that I found out that never go bad.
Really? Is honey one of them?
Eternal shelf lives. There's four foods that I found that have eternal shelf lives.
All right, give us one.
All right, one, salt.
Salt
never goes bad.
I'm trying to think, does salt go bad? I guess it really doesn't, does it?
Oh, never. Ever goes bad. Look it up to figure it out. You show me some salt that goes bad.
I don't need to look it up. I have an expert with a microphone telling me.
Exactly. I know. I know things. Number two, can you guess?
Yeah, I like to guess. I like to guess. Honey.
Honey is one.
Yeah. Point. Hold on a second. Here we go. Points for me.
Okay, yo. Terrific.
Absolutely. Honey, on some real talk, they found... thousands and thousands of year old honey, and it looks like it's fresh honey.
Wow.
It's like in sealed jars. They've like found it in like Egyptian tombs that are 3,000-4,000 years old, and when they open it up, the honey looks like maybe they just put it in there.
Yo, Jeffy, I'm trying to get some 1,000-year-old honey for our Mohegan Sun event this year.
Yeah, me too. Just to eat and rub it on my belly.
We gotta source that shit.
So all right, the other one, sugar.
Doesn't ever go bad? No.
I'm it's bad, man. Get some sugar. Just put it in a thing. It'll just stay there. Even if it crystallizes and gets harder, you can break it back down. It never goes bad. Wow. It's always sweet sugar. It's never going to go bad.
Damn. Dan, did you know that?
I didn't know about the sugar, no.
All right. Now tell me the fourth one. Think of what it might be.
All right, Dan, I already guessed one and got points for the team. This is up to you now.
Fuck.
Twinkies.
I knew the first two. Twinkies. I had sugar and honey.
That wasn't on the list.
Well, your list is wrong. I've seen... All right, never mind.
Dried beans?
Ooh. Rice?
I didn't look up and didn't see. Rice, actually, is the one. That's right, Plum.
Dead. You're off the team. I win.
All rice.
Damn.
All right. Rice. Like grain, brown rice or something like that, kept in a dry bag in an area, will never go bad. It has an eternal shelf life.
Okay, so rice, sugar, honey, and Twinkies.
Yeah, and listen, I eat the fuck out of some bugs with rice, sugar, honey, and salt.
Bro, we got rice, sugar, honey, and salt. We'd be fine.
If I had rice.
We'd be fine.
If I had rice, I could literally eat anything.
Bro,
Chef Bunley has taught me that.
Yep.
I can put anything on a little rice and season it up properly with something sweet, a little salt.
Let me tell you something right now. If the three of us and Chef Bun are on a deserted island stranded for months and we got some rice, some honey, some salt, and some fucking, what was the other one?
Sugar.
Sugar. We'd be fine. We'd be just fine. I can build a shelter.
Honey, don't need sugar. But we'd have some spears, too.
Well, I'd like honey because I like to make a nice little beverage out of it for everybody.
Make some mead. We're absolute. We would be getting a little drunk on weekends.
I think we'd be fine.
We'd have a lot of work to do. We'd be on a deserted island, so there's a lot of work to do every day. We can't just be getting wasted.
Absolutely not. We got to build a shelter. Jeffy, let me ask you this. Can you start a fire?
Absolutely. I had a merit badge.
Okay.
Fair enough. I had a merit badge.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Dan, what are you bringing to the table? Jeff and I are starting fires, making mead, building shelters. What do you got?
Military training.
For who? For what?
Who knows, man? The fucking there's pirates out there. You fucking think motherfuckers will show up and kill you?
You go step to security detail.
I'm here to make sure that doesn't happen. I got you. Make sure that shit doesn't happen. And you know I'm a cook. I'm kill deer and whatever animal might be there. There's got to be something. I'll eat crickets. I don't give a shit.
All right, there we go. Yeah. Well, good. We got it all
set.
You're
gonna work it out.
Can't wait to text Chef Bun and tell him we got it worked out. It's gonna be good.
Make loincloths.
It's gonna be good. Listen, if all of us are wearing loincloths, I know we don't have a camera, but I'm gonna wish that we did. We may have to take turns drawing a portrait. That's all I'm saying. That's just gonna be my Instagram picture.
You got a hot mess just out there dirty in loincloths. How long have you been out here? 2 days.
2 days? How the fuck you got a full beard? Don't worry about that. It's not a beard. It's hair from we found on the ground from some animal. We glued it on our chin. Be more manly.
It's from the muscles.
Hey.
The muscles we ate.
I've been spending a lot of time this week getting prepared for an NPR program all about pumpkins and pumpkin spice. And I've learned a lot about pumpkins. I'm going to be on Star 99 Radio and 99.1, a bunch of stations all across the country next week. Talking pumpkins and holiday stuff and pumpkin recipes with our friends Anna and Raven from the Anna and Raven Show. And I got some great things that I learned, boys, I want to share on the program tonight. Did you guys know that the jack-o'-lantern, or actually let me rephrase that, the word pumpkin wasn't actually used until the fairy tale Cinderella was written? Did you guys know that? How fucked up is that? Cinderella invented the pumpkin.
Wow. Really?
It's pretty crazy. And our first, air quoting here, jack-o'-lanterns came from the Irish. And the Irish would carve turnips and beets for Halloween. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't carve pumpkins because pumpkins weren't around then. So that was pretty interesting. And pumpkins themselves, friends, are you ready for the last of my pumpkin knowledge? Contain about 500 seeds each. How about that?
Oh, shit.
No matter what size they are, about 500 seeds.
Wow. That's dope. Who's counting them?
I count them. I counted four pumpkins. Nice.
Those turnip jack-o'-lanterns are dope.
Yep. Jeffy, what are you going to argue with me now?
I was just going to say, I don't know if there's ever 500 seeds in a pumpkin because we always roast ours. And if there was 500, I might not be able to eat them all in one sitting.
Well, there's 500 seeds roughly in a pumpkin, and not all of them are like giant big seeds. So it's there.
All right. Maybe in Connecticut.
Okay, here we go. Well,
there is a Connecticut pumpkin.
That's true. There's more than 750 varieties of pumpkin. Gentlemen, what a great program tonight, huh? Final thoughts. Dan, what do you got for us before we get out of here?
Oh, this was great. I love this. I'm so happy that I got to speak to Chef Bun. Like, really, like, this was a very, very exciting episode. Like, I'm the way he talks about food to his perspective is amazing. And to see that and to understand that and to get a little bit of insight into his mind, I can't wait till we can throw down with him. It's gonna be dope.
No doubt about it. Jeffy, any final thoughts for us tonight?
Well, I just text Chef Bun. I told him, you know, I thanked him for being on the show. I told him what a great time it was, and that we all just looked forward. And he said again, I just can't wait to get you guys over with your families and for us all to hang out and cook together. And I was like, sounds like a dream come true. And I just feel like we met another good brother.
Yeah.
You know, like the show, we're constantly meeting chefs who inspire us and you said earlier, make us want to be better chefs, and tonight was no exception to that.
Well said, my friend. Well said. For Chef Jeff, for Chef Dan, I'm Chef Plum. Remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's give it the time it deserves. Check out our friend Chef Bun. We'll see you next week.
Too sweet to be sour, I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.